The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
That's right. Welcome aboard, one and all, to another episode of Walking Through the Language of the Heart with our good friend Chris S. And we were not here last week. Chris was, he was out hanging out in Malibu, California. Yeah. Doing speaking at an event there in Malibu. And you had a great time doing so, true?
Oh, wow. It was really something, Monty.
Yeah. Yeah. What a privilege, you know how sometimes we hear people say, I'm so grateful to be anywhere, right? We get to be everywhere. I mean, the places that we have gotten to travel, the people that we've gotten to rub shoulders with, both you and I, we have just been very fortunate and very privileged. It's just an honor.
There's really no doubt. Every once in a while, we get some extraordinary things.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So, in this book, listeners, if this is the first time you've tuned in, this is from the book, The Language of the Heart, Bill W.'s Grapevine Writings from 1944 to 1970. And they are broken up into articles. These are articles that he has written for the Grapevine. And this article is called Why Alcoholics Anonymous is Anonymous. So, launch us forth there, Chris.
Sure, Monty. So like a lot of the traditions, like a lot of the principles and in Alcoholics Anonymous, the experience broadens and deepens as time goes by. Mm-hmm. This is 1955. If you read the foreword to the first edition, which was 1939, it's basically saying we need to be anonymous because we just can't be overwhelmed by all of you, you know, trying to, you know, get into Alcoholics Anonymous all at once. So, we're going to be handicapped. And we'll find out in this article, but I think anonymity, the concept of it, the reasoning for it, broadened and deepened over the years. And we're going to get a chance to see whether or not my thesis is true there. I'm going to start reading. We're on page 209, January 1955. Why Alcoholics Anonymous is Anonymous. As never before, the struggle for power, importance, and wealth is tearing civilization apart. Man against man, family against family, group against group, nation against nation. He had no idea.
Wow.
1955.
Compared to
what's going on in 2023. Nearly all those engaged in this fierce competition declare that their aim is peace and justice for themselves, their neighbors, and their nations. Give us power, and we shall have justice. Give us fame, and we shall set a great example. Give us money, and we shall be comfortable and happy. People throughout the world deeply believe that and act accordingly. On this appalling dry bender, society seems to be staggering down a dead-end road. The stop sign is clearly marked. It says, disaster. What has this got to do with anonymity and Alcoholics Anonymous? We of AA ought to know. nearly every one of us has traversed this identical dead-end path. Powered by alcohol and self-justification, many of us have pursued the phantoms of self-importance and money right up to the disaster stop sign. Then came AA. We faced about and found ourselves on a new high road where the direction signs say never a word about power, fame, or wealth. The new sign reads, "This way to sanity and serenity. The price is self-sacrifice." You know, Monty, I'm gonna just digress a little bit.
Sure.
There's been a number of people that are very, very close to me that I've known a long time that I've participated in a lot of events with just recently who have relapsed. I heard about somebody, you know, I dearly care about when I was on the retreat last weekend. I'm like, what? You know, he's getting out of a halfway house. And one more time, I get to see like what we're really up against here. Mm-hmm. You know, this is really no joke if you have alcoholism. And there are some people that are in the news lately because they've just died. And you and I know they've been in recovery, struggling with recovery
sure.
for a long, long time. And you know, they overdosed and died. We're really up against something here. And Bill is warning us about false gods, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think we sacrifice ourselves at the altar of self-indulgence, prosperity, fame, and much of the time, all with good intentions, right? Just like this was saying, you know, give us this, give us that, and we'll use it for good. But then it turns around and bites us.
Our new book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. So this is the first time he's saying that that book has been published. States that anonymity is the greatest protection our society can ever have. It says also that the spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice. Let's turn to AA's 20 years of experience and see how we arrived at that belief, now expressed in our traditions 11 and 12. At the beginning, we sacrificed alcohol. We had to, or it would have killed us. But we couldn't get rid of alcohol unless we made other sacrifices. Big shotism and phony thinking had to go. We had to toss self-justification, self-pity, and anger right out the window. We had to quit the crazy contest for personal prestige and big bank balances. We had to take personal responsibility for our sorry state and quit blaming others for it. Wow, this is really the first time I've ever heard him say we had to quit looking for big bank balances, Monty.
Wow.
Good thing you and I haven't had that problem.
Yeah, right. I remember one time when I was boo-hooing to you about, oh, I don't know where we're going to get the money to keep this thing going. And you said something about, well, it's probably a good thing you're not making a lot of money. And I would agree.
It's not convenient, but it's advantageous.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So really, what Bill is basically saying is the main topic of like the last 30 years of his life, humility. Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about you know, the big shotism, the, you know, the power, the prestige, all you know. Going for all those things is going to be counterproductive to our recovery.
Don't you think that people seek after that stuff because it's a matter of, when you get right down to it, it's a matter of the need to want to feel like you're in control. And if you feel like you have to be in control, it's really hard to understand what powerlessness is.
You know, I give a talk every Wednesday night to a treatment center filled with people in their first month.
Mm.
And that's the main thing I'm trying to get through to them, that they could be wrong.
Yeah, right.
about their relationship with alcohol and drugs.
Right.
They could be wrong, Monty.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they don't got this. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I definitely do. Were these sacrifices? Yes, they were. To gain enough humility and self-respect to stay alive at all, we had to give up what we had really been our deepest possessions, dearest possessions, our ambition and our illegitimate pride.
Wow.
He's not messing around.
No, he's
here.
Not.
But even this was not enough. Sacrifice had to go much further. Other people had to benefit too. So we took on some 12-step work. We began to carry the AA message. We sacrificed time, energy, and our money to do this. We couldn't keep what we had unless we gave it away. Did we demand that our new prospects give us anything? Were we asking them for power over their lives, for fame for our good work, or for a cent of their money? No, we were not. We found that if we demanded any of these things, our 12-step work went flat. So these natural desires had to be sacrificed. Otherwise, our prospects received little or no sobriety. Nor, indeed, did we. Thus, we learned that sacrifice had to bring a double benefit, or else little at all. We began to know about the kind of giving of ourselves that had no price tag on it. When the first AA group took form, we soon learned a lot more of this. We found that each of us had to make willing sacrifices for the group itself, sacrifices for the common welfare. The group in turn found that it had to give up many of its own rights for the protection and welfare of each member. And for AA as a whole, these sacrifices had to be made or AA couldn't continue to exist. Obviously, he's just finished and published the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. And the main purpose of that book being published was to publish the traditions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The step part.
That was the hook, right?
Yeah, that was the hook.
Yeah.
Bill put that in there to entice people to buy the book, knowing that nobody's going to buy a book of traditions. But if you highlight the steps about how they're going to get better,
yeah,
the thing's going to fly off the shelf.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he was smart about that, but he's talking about the group welfare. It's really funny. Another tangent. I'm part of this group and there's an individual in the group who obviously has some additional challenges besides alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
And that individual caused some trouble with a couple of group members. One group member's not even going to come back. He's scared to death.
Wow.
Terroristic threat kind of stuff, right?
Yee.
And I'm like talking with a group member, and we're trying to plan for if this situation gets worse, what are we going to do? And at the bottom of all this is the group's welfare comes first, followed closely by personal welfare, but followed by welfare. In other words, what we're going to do is we're going to do the least amount of harm, protecting the most we can of the integrity of the meeting, whatever action we take. But, Bill is thinking about this in 1955. He's thinking about how we may best preserve this thing, because without it, countless alcoholics to come, won't have an opportunity to recover.
And I think sometimes people will get confused when they hear the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So we throw that phrase around sometimes out of context, Yeah, that's the only requirement for AA membership. But there are civil requirements for meeting attendance. I mean, you can't walk into a meeting stripped naked. You can't walk into a meeting brandishing a firearm, waving it around. I mean, there are certain things that you're going to be asked, well, maybe you should step outside and come back tomorrow. And I've previously said, well, you can't kick the guy out. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Well, we're not kicking him out of the fellowship, but it's not appropriate for him to be in the meeting today. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Listen, Monty, I've even seen people grab a group member who's been incredibly harmful and, illegal in their behavior with minors. Let me just put it that way. You can extrapolate what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I've seen those members cast out of whole hold areas.
Oh, wow.
You know, and told if they ever come back, they will be beaten so badly that they'll end up in a hospital for a month if they ever come back to the meetings in this area. Now think about it like this. They're not being kicked out of AA.
Right.
AA is a very, very big thing. The group members, for right or wrong, are making a choice to protect the meeting from a predator.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can make a case that none of us have sunk so low to not be accepted. You know, that's in the big book, right? But tradition one, the group's welfare comes first.
You have to use
common sense and prudent judgment with certain situations, or one person can absolutely destroy a meeting or meetings with their behavior. Now, yeah. would that be okay? I don't think
no.
so.
You know.
So these are things that groups, you know, these are growing pains that groups are going to have to deal with, I think, at different periods of time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes we do it right. Sometimes we make a mistake. But we're learning. We're all on a learning curve.
Yeah.
Bonnie. Anyway, out of these experiences and realizations, the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous began to take shape and substance. Gradually, we saw that the unity, the effectiveness, yes, even the survival of AA would always depend upon our continued willingness to sacrifice our personal ambitions and desires for that common safety and welfare. Just as sacrifice meant survival for the individual, so did sacrifice mean unity and survival for the group and for the group's entire fellowship. Viewed in this light, AA's 12 traditions are little else than a list of sacrifices which the experience of 20 years has taught us that we must make individually and collectively if AA itself is to stay alive and healthy. Wow, that's a powerful paragraph.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's like, why? It's tradition week, and we, you know, we're doing traditions. You know, I thought it was going to be a step. That's a powerful paragraph.
Very powerful.
You know, next topic meeting, I think I'm going to use that. But I think this is the first time I've heard them referred to as sacrifices.
Hmm.
You know, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. That's yeah. So let me know how that goes when you bring that up.
I will. I'll let you know. In our 12 traditions, we have set our faces against nearly every trend in the outside world. We have denied ourselves personal government, professionalism, and the right to say who our members shall be. We have abandoned do-goodism, reform, and paternalism. We refuse charitable money and prefer to pay our own way. We will cooperate with practically everybody, yet we decline to marry our society to anyone. We abstain from public controversy and will not quarrel among ourselves about the things that so rip society asunder, religions, politics, and reform. We have but one purpose, to carry the AA message to the still sick alcoholic who wants it. That's a really powerful paragraph summing up the traditions and the, you know, the meaning and reasoning for the traditions.
The statement there, and we will not quarrel amongst ourselves about those things.
Yeah.
And so, okay, I you know what? Okay, now I'm going to bring that up. And I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, politics, religion, and reform.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you know me really well, you don't know what denomination I am. Unless you know me really well, you don't know how I vote.
Right.
And I don't take a position on any reform, because who am I?
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, if the meetings become about that kind of thing, we've lost our way.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. See you later. We take these attitudes not at all because we claim special virtue or wisdom. We do these things because hard experience has told us that we must. If AA is to survive in the distraught world of today, We also give up rights and make sacrifices because we ought to, and better yet, because we want to. AA is a power greater than any of us. It must go on living, or else uncounted thousands of our kind will surely die. This we know. Mm. Now, where does anonymity fit into this picture? What is anonymity anyhow? Why do we think it is the greatest single protection that AA can ever have? Why is it our greatest symbol of personal sacrifice, the spiritual key to all our traditions, to our whole way of life? So this is the first time I've ever heard him say the anonymity tradition is the spiritual key to all the other traditions. Mm. That's pretty interesting.
Yep.
The following fragment of AA history will reveal, I deeply hope, the answer we seek. Years ago,
Oh boy, here we go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Years ago, a noted ball player sobered up through AA. Because his comeback was so spectacular, he got a tremendous personal ovation in the press, and Alcoholics Anonymous got much of the credit. His full name and picture as a member of AA were seen by millions of fans. It did us plenty of good. Alcoholics flocked in. We loved this. I was especially excited because it gave me ideas. Soon I was on the road, happily handing out personal interviews and pictures. To my delight, I found I could hit the front pages just as he could. Besides, he couldn't hold his publicity pace, but I could hold mine. I only needed to keep traveling and talking. The local AA groups and newspapers did the rest. I was astonished when recently I looked at those old newspaper stories. For 2 or 3 years, I guess, I was AA's number one anonymity breaker. So I can't really blame any AA who has grabbed the spotlight since. I set the main example myself years ago. At the time, this looked like the thing to do. Thus justify, I ate it up. What a bang it gave me when I read those two-column spreads about Bill the Broker, full name and picture, the guy who was saving drunks by the thousands. Then this fair sky began to be a little overcast. Murmurs were heard from AA skeptics who said, this guy Bill is hogging the big time. Dr. Bob isn't getting his share. Or again, suppose all this publicity goes to Bill's head and he gets drunk on us. That stung. How could they persecute me when I was doing so much good? I told my critics that this was America, and didn't they know I had the right of free speech? And wasn't this country and every other run by big-name leaders? Anonymity was maybe okay for the average AA, but co-founder ought to be exceptions. The public certainly had a right to know who we were. You know, Bill is so awesomely honest when it comes to how he's fallen short.
Mm-hmm.
You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like he's as honest as can possibly be about his shortcomings and about mistakes that he made, and the 3 year period where he was running around being Bill Wilson, drunk saver, is interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because anonymity in 1939, it was in the foreword, so it wasn't like this was a concept he came up with after he went out for 3 years and spoke everywhere with his full name.
Yeah.
So this is kind of interesting. Real AA power drivers, prestige hungry people, folks like me, weren't long in catching on. They were going to be exceptions too. They said that anonymity before the general public was just for timid people. All the braver and bolder souls like themselves should stand right up before the flashbulbs and be counted. This kind of courage would soon do away with the stigma on alcoholics. The public would right away see what fine citizens recovered drunks could make. So more and more members broke their anonymity, all for the good of AA. What if a drunk was photographed with the governor? Both he and the governor deserved the honor, didn't they? Thus we zoomed along down the dead end road. So there's some experience he must have had,
yeah,
that really changed his mind. The next anonymity breaking development looked even rosier. A close AA friend of mine wanted to go in for alcohol education. A department of a great university interested in alcoholism wanted her to go out and tell the general public that alcoholics were sick people and that plenty could be done about it. That's got to be Marty Mann. My friend was a crack public speaker and writer. Could she tell the general public that she was an AA member? Well, why not? By using the name Alcoholics Anonymous, she'd get fine publicity for a good brand of alcohol education and for AA too. I thought it an excellent idea, and they therefore gave my blessing. So this is the beginning of the NCADD, that was in the 40s. That was in the 40s. So I'm interested in what he's going to say here because I've been an NCADD board member for 15 years.
Yeah.
AA was already getting to be famous and a valuable name. Backed by our name and her own great ability, the results were immediate. In nothing flat, her own full name and picture plus excellent accounts of her educational project and of AA landed in nearly every large paper in North America. The public understanding of alcoholism increased. The stigma on drunks lessened. And AA got new members. Surely there could be nothing wrong with that. But there was. For the sake of this short-term benefit, we were taking on a future liability of huge and menacing proportions. Presently, an AA member began to publish a crusading magazine devoted to the cause of prohibition. He thought Alcoholics Anonymous ought to help make the world bone dry. He disclosed himself as an AA member and freely used the AA name to attack the evils of whiskey and those who made it and drank it. He pointed out that he too was an educator and that his brand of education was the right kind. As for putting AA into the public controversy, he thought that was exactly where it should be. So he busily used AA's name to do just that. Of course, he broke his anonymity to help his cherished cause along. So here's where motives change in this anonymity break. And I believe Bill just had to draw a line: no anonymity break.
Yeah,
you can't judge, what's a worthy anonymity break and what isn't. So he's kind of learning by watching what's mm-hmm. going on. This was followed by a proposal from a liquor trade association that an AA member take on the job of education. People were to be told that too much alcohol is bad for anyone and that certain people, the alcoholics, shouldn't drink at all. What could be the matter with this? The catch was that our AA friend had to break his anonymity. Every piece of publicity and literature was to carry his full name as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. This, of course, would be bound to create a definite public impression that AA favored education, liquor trade style.
Huh.
Though these two developments never happened to get far, their implications were nevertheless terrific. They spelled it right out for us. By hiring out to another cause and then declaring his AA membership to the whole public, it was in the power of an AA to marry Alcoholics Anonymous to practically any enterprise or controversy at all, good or bad. The more valuable the AA name became, the greater the temptation would be. Oh, this gives me an even deeper understanding of his, his quest to drill into all of our heads the importance of anonymity.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall or on Bill's shoulder as he was seeing some of these problems be birthed, and going, oh crap.
Yeah. What am I going to say? I've been breaking my anonymity for 3 years, and this liquor salesman guy is ruining it for everybody.
Yeah.
No more of that. But taking the firm position on we must never break our anonymity at the level of press, radio, or film, I think that's done more good than harm, Monty. I really do.
I do too. I agree with you. Let's see where we are.
All right, we're about halfway through the article.
Okay.
It's interesting to see some of the rationale that Bill was using in this article that I wasn't you know, I wasn't familiar with up to this point.
Do you think that today, how do I put this question? It seems like the seriousness of this doesn't seem to be as prevalent as it was back then when he was learning these lessons. Would you agree with that? Do you think it's a little loosey-goosey today?
You know, I think communication in and around the fellowship in general is looser, and it's easier for groups and members to become errant groups and errant members without even coming to the attention mm-hmm. of some of the area or group officers. So I've seen a lot of anonymity breaks, and it's usually by someone other than the alcoholic, their press agent or mm-hmm. the person writing the article about so-and-so, you know,
right.
He went to AA and, you know, he just OD'd and died. You know, that always gives us a black eye. That happens a lot, but there are still people who, you know, who just don't know any better and announce their AA membership, on a talk show.
Right, right.
Because they're a Hollywood actor or something, you know, and they just don't, I guess they just don't either know any better or they don't care. But sure. It's, you know, I don't think it's going to damage us like it used to.
You know, it's interesting. I was at a 12-step convention. I won't say which one, but I was at a 12-step convention not long ago. And anonymity was the theme of the whole thing. And they were selling bumper stickers, coffee cups, and T-shirts like crazy. So if you're walking around with a coffee cup and a T-shirt and a bumper sticker on your car, everybody knew. Are they, you know, they may not have known that you were saying that you were a member of, but come on, right? I mean, do you know any 12-step member of a specific group that wears that T-shirt that isn't a member? Probably not.
Yeah. I stay away from bumper. I've been able to stay away from bumper stickers one day at a time, Monty.
Yeah.
You know,
I went through a bumper sticker craze years ago when I was a youth pastor. I had Jesus stickers all over my Rambler.
Sure, fish stickers.
My
and stuff,
fish.
Right?
My boss is a Jewish carpenter, you know, stuff like that, right? And then there was the condescending one, you know. Talking about hell, and I look back at that those days and I think, oh God, what a knucklehead. Yes.
Hey Monty, yeah. Before we go, I want to bring something up that was brought up at this retreat that I think really is important for, you know, people who are supportive of and members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm. I'll do it real quickly. Okay. So when we first started coming around many years ago, we were putting a dollar in the basket, right? And
sure.
A lot of times we were going to five or six meetings a week, and we're putting a dollar in the basket. So let's say that was 25 years ago.
Okay.
Today that dollar is you know, it's really about $3.50.
You bet.
You know, in value today, and we're not going to as many meetings.
Right.
So our financial support of Alcoholics Anonymous has gone down by 75%, and we're longtime members. If we're still just putting a dollar in the basket, so and here's another problem with that. Since COVID, group structures are there's whole groups and whole areas that have become dysfunctional. There's service positions that have just, you know, the people just went away during COVID and have yet to come back. So putting a dollar in the basket and having the treasurer then allocate that dollar to general service, to the area and the district, that's broken down. So what's happened is Alcoholics Anonymous at the General Service, two things. One is they're breaking into their prudent reserve, and the other is they're really going to be forced into a restructuring. They're gonna need to figure out how to do all their expenses, at a more reduced rate. Which I'm not necessarily saying that that's a bad thing. However, as financial, you know, my financial support of Alcoholics Anonymous is not doing what it used to do. So on the website, you know, on the AA website, the General Service website, mm-hmm. you can click on a link, and what you can do is just like your auto pay for car insurance or cable bill or whatever, you can set aside a certain amount of money that once a month it will be deducted from your bank account uh-huh. or your debit card and sent directly where you want it to be sent. And the message coming out from Alcoholics Anonymous is we have to look at how we financially support Alcoholics Anonymous with a whole new pair of glasses because of the changes that I talked about earlier. So I thought I would share that with you. Personally, I'm planning on I've been throwing $5 in the basket every time I go.
Yeah, I'm a $5 guy too.
I think it'll be a little easier. You know, I'll continue to contribute to my group because they need to pay the church and keep the lights on and all that, right? But as far as supporting Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, I'm gonna set up an auto pay. And I think, you know, I think the way forward for AA members is going to be something like that. I think we need to talk to our sponsees and kind of encourage that as a way of staying self-supporting through our own contributions.
Sure. So the website would be AA.org. And do you know what the link is for that?
It's on there. I don't know how to actually describe it to you.
Well, I'm going to find out right now. So we have that for the listeners. Okay, very simple. Go to AA.org, and on those three little menu lines on the right at the very top, just click on it, and then you'll see a downward menu, and there'll be Make a Donation.
Perfect.
And if you click on that, it'll
say, yeah, there it is. Yep. Make a contribution right at the very top.
Yeah, make a contribution. Yep. Yep. Good deal. Well, and I'm wondering if for those people that are really interested in knowing where the money goes, I'm sure that the books are open to the general public, right? I mean, they're
you know, some questions are better. That's not asked.
Well, you know, there are some people that have been in service for a long time. Maybe they've been delegates or whatever, and they kind of know some ins and outs, and they may be going, you know, I kind of want to know how much of my money is going to the lawyer and how much of my money is actually going to AA and how much, you know, that kind of thing.
As a nonprofit, an annual report is going to be made available to the members
that.
And the public, and in the annual report you'll see the financials.
Sure.
And if you want to get that granular about, you know,
some
how
people
much
are.
Money goes yeah. how much money goes to the translation department, how much money, you know, goes to the conferencing costs,
yeah,
you'll find all that. But you know, we're not, you know, we don't have to look at it this way. Each year for the last several years, they've been a million or two in the red. There's a million members. Let's say there's a 1,500,000 members. That would mean we'd have to just contribute an extra dollar.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not much, but I'm gonna, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody else what to do, but I am going to.
That's a good idea. I love it.
I'm going to put together.
I like it.
I'm going to put together a reoccurring donation.
Yeah. So, I'm not suggesting anybody else do this, but this is something I do. So, my 12-step home group meets on a Friday night, and it's about 14 miles from here. Before I leave, I have a practice. I check my wallet. I just do, because we have a place in our home that we keep some cash, right? And if I don't have $5 in my wallet, I go get $5 and put it in my wallet, because I'm a $5 guy too. And so it's just something you just kind of go prepared. The other thing about people that are picky about wanting to know where everything goes, listen, pray about it. And, you know, if God tells you to give, trust God to divvy it out the way it's supposed to be divvied out. I had a Bible college president was speaking in front of the student body at a chapel service one year, and they were talking about raising funds for something. And he said, listen, when God tells you to give, you let the results be up to him. When he tells you to do it, just do it. Just be obedient and do it. And trust him. And that's kind of my take on that. You know, if you've been going to your 12-step fellowship year after year after year, and you've been sucking up coffee, and I don't want to put anybody feeling on a guilt trip here, but if you've gained from going to your fellowship and you've never considered maybe saying a prayer and asking God what he'd have you do with throwing some buckos their way, I really encourage you to do it. I really do, because there's a lot that goes into this thing.
Yeah, I agree with you, Monty. And are they going to mismanage it in certain ways? Yes. I think the spiritual exercise is to be okay with that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, none of us are perfect. You know what I mean?
The other thing I want to comment on too is, and I'm curious what your opinion is of this. There are some rogue groups out there that have broken away from their area or their district, and they're, you know, we know that all you need is a coffee pot and some big books, and you get yourself a meeting. And the finances are going to keep the meeting going and to pay for literature and to pay for the coffee, but they're not sending any money to their district. That concerns me. I get you have every right to have a meeting and not do that. I get that. But if you're carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, I really think you need to do your due diligence. And if you're a group and you're not paying your tithe, if you will, to your district, I think you really need to be doing that. Just my opinion.
I agree with you. The district and the areas are the ones that are they're doing the boots on the ground work for the meetings that we go to.
Yeah.
And you may have real serious criticism of some of the moves that General Services made, because sometimes they do some real boneheaded stuff, and sometimes they do some stuff that just is far and away against the traditions. They just do, and I can see groups, you know, in protest holding money back from General Service. There are groups now that are seriously doing that because of what they perceive as a legitimate grievance about, you know, the trustees and how they're handling, you know, the service structure.
Mm-hmm.
But don't hold the money back from your areas and districts. You know,
right.
Bill Wilson himself gave us permission to withhold money if we don't like the way things are being run. We read that article probably 3 or 4 months ago,
mm-hmm.
that said that's how we protest. That's how we show we're not in unity with how the management is being handled by withholding our funds. Bill gave us that permission, but the districts and the areas and even the inner groups, you know, they're not the ones that are you know, making policy decisions that are going against our grain.
Right.
So, you know, if you, you know, withholding a dollar in the basket is withholding from all of those organizations.
From everybody.
You know, you can make arrangements to be supportive of the parts of Alcoholics Anonymous you want to support.
Sure, sure. All right, good stuff. Good sharing, good show. Next week, we'll pick it up with part two of Why Alcoholics Anonymous is anonymous, with our good friend Chris S. Chris, thank you so much, buddy.
Monty, thank you.
Have a wonderful Christmas weekend. And Christmas is on Monday, so in the beginning of next week, have a wonderful Monday celebrating with your family.
I plan to. Thank you, Monty.
Absolutely. All right, listeners, listen to the very end here so you know how to catch up on all the shows. Until next time, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S., and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. Bye-bye now. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof.